Hello, everybody, and welcome to another podcast of Almost Paradise in North Idaho. And I am your guide, your host, Ted Ludlum, up here about 30 miles from the Canadian border in North Idaho. Boundary County, Bonner's Ferry is our home, and things are turning to winter. But I do have a warning for you today. I am by myself. I am flying solo. Yes, that could be dangerous. I have no guest in studio. And Joy is not in the house, so I can say and do pretty much whatever I want. And so who knows what's going to happen? I think the takeoff of this solo flight will be okay. And the flight itself should be fine. I might even put it on automatic pilot for a while. But watch out for the landing at the end of the podcast. You never know. That could be scary. And of course, speaking of scary, this is the week of Halloween. Today, as I record this, is Wednesday. Halloween is Friday. And so that the landing itself could be scary along with the rest of the week and, of course, this weekend. So also, that landing will be the very last segment of the show, so I would encourage you to stay tuned to the very end to see if I land this plane safely or crash and burn. I may crash and burn before that. But first, a word from today's sponsor. And yes, North Idaho, if you're in Bonner's Ferry, Boundary County, Bonner County, you've got to check out EL Internet Northwest. They're 100% local. Their owners, their techs, their installers, even the billing people, they're all right here in the community. Whether you're streaming your favorite shows, working from home, gaming, or doing video calls across the region, reliability matters, and EL delivers in reliability and speed. Their fixed wireless, fiber, and cable networks are built to get you consistently fast speeds, even out in the more country, rural, isolated spots. And there are several of those in this area. Imagine this. No frozen video during game night. No lag mid-work call. No waiting for downloads while you're in the mountains. With EL, dozens of homes in Boundary County and North Bonner are already getting this great service. And here's the kicker. Since they're local, you are not just a number. You are a neighbor. Need support? They're right there. Want installation in a tricky location? They've done it. Want something dependable? That's their promise. So if you're tired of slow drops, dead zones, or that'll do, internet service, good enough, pick up the phone or hop online with EL Internet Northwest. It's the local, fast, rock-solid connection that North Idaho deserves. So visit elinternetnw.com or call 208-946-4147. That's EL Internet Northwest, your high-speed hometown internet partner. Thanks for tuning in. And now, back to the show. I was talking about flying and how I'm hoping not to crash as I solo this particular episode of Almost Paradise in North Idaho. Speaking of flying, when I first interviewed Philip Weaver a few weeks ago, I was struck by his calm confidence, the kind that comes not just from training, but from a calling. He has decided to become a missionary pilot, ferrying supplies and people from Florida to Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Philip is working on the edge of uncertainty. Each flight is a small act of courage. Lifting off with prayer, crossing rough skies sometimes, and trusting God to guide every mile. Now, I haven't talked to Philip lately, and there is a Hurricane Melissa down in that area right now. So I hope he's kind of taking it easy and staying on the ground. Even though he is also a certified mechanic, I wouldn't trust going against that hurricane. But I remember him telling me that during his training, he was told to keep the plane's engines running and the doors locked while he was on the ground in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Now, I bring this up because there was a recent kidnapping of a missionary pilot named Kevin Rideout in Niger in Africa. I find myself thinking often of Philip and others like him. Kevin was kidnapped very close to the presidential palace in Niger, and there's been no word of him, where he's at, what's happened to him. You know, these missionaries, their work reminds us that faith doesn't always keep us safe from danger. It gives us the strength to face it. The news from Niger brings home the sobering truth that those who carry help and hope into troubled places sometimes do so at great personal risk. When Philip shared his desire to be a missionary pilot and mechanic on my program, it was clear that his motivation went far beyond adventure or duty. He spoke about faith as something meant to move, to go where need exists, even when comfort and caution might urge us to stay home. It was his way of saying that belief without action is like a grounded airplane capable of flight, but not going anywhere. I think it was family waiting back home, the community that prays for him, and the countless people in the Caribbean who depend on that small plane for food and medicine and connection. Each trip he makes is a reminder that the gospel isn't confined to pulpits or pews. It takes wing through the hearts and hands of those willing to serve. So as we continue to pray for Kevin Rideout's safe return, let us also lift up Philip Weaver and all who serve around the world. May God steady their hands, guide their way, and bring them safely home after every mission. In a world too often defined by fear, Philip's work reminds us that real faith still dares to serve and help. Now, shifting gears a little bit, this podcast is going to be shifting gears a little bit, going from here to there and all around. And some of you out there were Seattle Mariners fans. And although Seattle is out of the playoffs and they're not in the World Series, they're not forgotten. It was a great series. I have a friend named Chris. He was really bummed. He's a big Seattle Mariner fan. And I sympathize. I support him. It was a hard Game 7 loss. They were actually leading in Game 7 in like the seventh inning when Toronto blasted out a 3-run home run to take the lead. And then they held that lead, and so Seattle was eliminated and did not make it to the World Series. They were so close. And remember, Seattle's the only team in the Major League Baseball ranks that has never been to a World Series, so it was so painful. You know, I remember back in the 70s, when I was in my 20s, my team, the Kansas City Royals, they got so close a couple times to the World Series, but their stumbling block was the New York Yankees. 3 years in a row, we met the Yankees in the playoffs. The winner would go to the World Series. I remember one year in particular, 1977. The Royals had a 3-2 lead, and it was in Kansas City. And we thought, oh, we're going to make it. We're going to make it. And we didn't make it. And then we still had Game 7 in Kansas City. And we lost that game, too. It was crushing. It was really, really sad. I sent a message to Chris. I haven't actually seen him face-to-face, the big Seattle fan. I haven't seen him face-to-face since the Seattle loss. But I sent him a text message reminding him that as fans, as sports fans, as high as the highs can be, the lows are lower. The lows are lower than the highs are high. That, I believe, is true, especially when you're so close to what you may have been waiting for all your adult life. So my sympathy to the Seattle Mariner fans and the Seattle Mariners themselves. They played well. They in many ways deserved to win, but didn't quite make it. And maybe next year. Maybe next year. That's always the call. Now, I'm going to bring up a memory that might bring back some warm fuzzies. The Mariners, way back in the 90s, they had a pitcher named Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson was called the Unit. He arrived in Seattle in a mid-1989 trade, and he spent the next decade in Seattle building himself from a wild pitcher but powerful left-hander into one of the game's greatest pitchers. His breakout with the Mariners came in 1993 when he struck out 308 batters, becoming the first Seattle pitcher to reach the 300 strikeout mark. 2 years later, in the strike-shortened 1995 season, he posted a remarkable 18-2 record and a 2.48 ERA with 294 strikeouts, earning his first American League Cy Young Award and helping carry Seattle into their first ever postseason. Over his Mariners tenure, Johnson transformed from his arsenal and mindset. Well, he transformed both his arsenal and mindset. He cleaned up his control, and he anchored the club's rotation in a way that secured his legacy in Seattle. I bring this up because today, off the mound, Johnson has been thoughtful about how and when he signs memorabilia, especially jerseys. In recent remarks, he explained that he rarely signs plain jerseys or baseball jerseys because he wants those signed items to hold greater value when used for charitable auctions. "It's the one thing I don't sign," he said, "because it's the one thing that can raise money for charities. There are not a lot of them floating out there." So he signs a few, but only special occasions, to increase the value of the ones that are out there. For example, one jersey with his lone signature reportedly sold for around $6,000 on eBay, underscoring how scarcity drives value for charity-driven auctions. His policy reflects a kind of long-view generosity. Limit supply so that when a signed jersey is used for a good cause, it can raise more funds rather than become a mass-produced collectible. I like that attitude. Obviously, I'm probably never going to meet Randy Johnson. I hope he's doing well in his life after baseball. And it's been a while since he retired. But his attitude says a lot to me about what kind of character he is, what kind of character he has. Okay? Now, I'm going to give out a quick little commercial. That's not really a commercial, I guess. Well, kind of a commercial. Up here in my little studio, my office upstairs in our house, we got a couple of chairs for our guests when we have them. And they're not the most comfortable chairs in the world. They're okay. They're fine. But after, you know, they get kind of uncomfortable sometimes for the guests. So Joy's been kind of on the lookout, and by golly, at a thrift store here in town, she saw, as we were driving down the road, a couple of kind of nice-looking chairs in front of this thrift store. And so we stopped, and we looked, and oh my gosh, they're pretty good. We're going to do a little shampooing and, you know, clean up a little bit. I may have to do a little sanding on the wood a little bit, maybe some new varnish or stain or something just to kind of spruce them up. But now my guests might be a little more comfortable as they sit here for whatever it is, 30, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour, as we chew the fat and talk about whatever it is they want to talk about. So you might check out these various thrift stores in the area. They just might have a piece of furniture or an article of clothing or something else that would be useful to you at a big, big discount. These chairs are like $5 each. I mean, how can you go wrong? What could go wrong? So anyway, that's kind of that as far as checking out your local thrift store and seeing if there's something there. Support the thrift stores. Well, then they are often connected, providing shelter for the animals and taking care of the animals and so on as well. So check those out, okay? Well, yes, as I mentioned earlier, we have Halloween week. Halloween's coming up in a couple days. And of course, we do have the annual Halloween debate. Every October, as the nights turn crisp and the pumpkins start glowing on porches, we find ourselves in that familiar tension. The excitement of Halloween and the questions that come with it. For kids, it's one of the happiest nights of the year. They plan costumes for weeks, and parents tag along, enjoying the laughter and the little adventures of door-to-door trick-or-treating. It's fun, it's creative, it's full of sugar, laughter, and bright colors, breaking the darkness of autumn. And for a lot of families, it's harmless fun, a way to be a part of the community, wave to neighbors, and celebrate the changing season. I know, me, growing up, I loved Halloween. I loved trick-or-treating. I'd get together with some of my friends. I'd come home with a bag full of candy. I'd dump the candy in the living room floor with my parents there. I was an only child, so I didn't have to share it. And my dad wasn't into candy, but my mom was a little bit, and so sometimes I had to share the candy with my mom, but I guess that's fair. And it was just a lot of fun. And I never really outgrew it, because as I had kids and they started trick-or-treating, I took pleasure in dressing up and scaring the trick-or-treaters when they came to our house. Yes, I just enjoyed that so much. So, and I'd go to a few costume parties as I was growing up in college and after college, and, you know, it was just fun for me. However, others, especially in Christian circles, they see it's a little bit complicated for them. And I consider myself a Christian, but for some Christians, it's just a real issue. You see, Halloween's roots reach back a long way to Celtic harvest festivals, and later to All Hallows' Eve, the night before All Saints' Day. And somewhere along the way, the evening picked up its darker symbols. Ghosts, witches, demons, skeletons, all things spooky. And that's where the debate begins. Some believers look at these symbols and say, wait a minute, why would we celebrate something that looks like it glorifies darkness and death and fear? Others respond, we're not glorifying darkness. We're just dressing up as a princess or a cowboy or a cartoon character, and we're eating candy with our neighbors. And around the argument goes. I've seen this play out in churches for years. Good people on both sides. Some think participation is an open door to evil. Others see it as an opportunity to show a little light in the middle of it all. Take my own church, for example. We host, or help host, along with other churches in the community, an event called the Harvest Festival every year. And it's actually called In His Image Harvest Festival. Guess who his is? Jesus, not the devil. It's on or near Halloween night. And in fact, it is Friday night is Halloween night. So it'll be going on here at the middle school in our town. And it's meant to be a safe, fun place for kids and families. There have been in the past hay rides and carnival games and chili cook-offs, and of course enough candy to make a dentist faint. We don't talk about ghosts or goblins. We talk about gratitude, community, and light. We even have some booths set up at the middle school that's going to be biblical in nature, talking about emphasizing, providing some illustrations of some of the heroes of the Bible. But even so, some people still raise their eyebrows and say, isn't that just Halloween in disguise? I get where they're coming from. For some, even the timing of the event feels like compromise. They worry that it blurs the line between celebration and participation, that in trying to meet culture halfway, the church loses a bit of its distinct voice. And yet, here's the tricky part. What's the alternative? Do we close our doors and turn off our lights and let the night belong only to fear? Or do we find ways to be present, to show kindness, to turn darkness into something that carries a spark of joy and love? The Bible doesn't mention Halloween, of course, but it does talk about being in the world, but not of it. That's always been a tightrope for believers, knowing how to live faithfully in a culture that doesn't always share our values. And maybe that's what nights like this are always about, the deciding how we show up. If your family chooses not to celebrate at all, that's fine. If you host a harvest party, dress up like a scarecrow, or hand out candy with a smile and a prayer, that's fine too. The important thing is why you do it and what spirit you bring to it. Because ultimately, Halloween isn't about candy or costumes. It's about what's in your heart when you open the door. Do we greet people with fear or with hospitality? Do we withdraw from the world or engage it with grace? When a child in a plastic superhero mask says, "Trick or treat," do they find a closed door in a dark house or a neighbor that sees them as someone worth a smile? You see, I think the real test for Christians on Halloween isn't how well we avoid evil. It's how well we reflect the good. Maybe it's handing out hot cocoa to cold kids. Maybe it's walking the neighborhood, praying silently for each home as we go. Maybe it's inviting families to your harvest festival so they see that faith isn't about fear, but it's about love. I understand the caution. I really do. The symbols of death and darkness can feel unsettling, but maybe that's also why this night matters, because it reminds us that light shines brightest when the world feels a little dark. So whether you carve pumpkins or hand out candy or skip the night altogether, remember, this is one of those moments when the world and the church look at each other and wonder who's going to speak first. And maybe, just maybe, this year, the church can smile, step forward, and say, "We're here, and we're not about to be afraid of the dark." My next little segment here is a Terry story. Now, some of you know that I talk about Terry quite a bit on this podcast, and he's one of my best friends, probably my best friend, and he sometimes offers some insight and some interesting challenges to my life that adds a little, texture, a perspective. And Terry's kind of interesting. One of the reasons I call North Idaho almost paradise, but not quite paradise, is the distance to many of life's modern day conveniences, such as Dairy Queen. The closest Dairy Queen to us is over the border in Creston, Canada, and that's about 30 miles away. So it's just not down the street or around the corner. The next closest is in Coeur d'Alene, which is about 80 miles south of us. You might think that's no big deal, but in the big picture of things, it probably isn't. After all, we live in a world where there are wars and elections and stock market crashes and government shutdowns, but none compared to the battle that breaks out every once in a while between my friend Terry and I when we go to Creston, British Columbia, across the border in Canada. See, we sometimes take a drive across the border and treat ourselves to the sacred tradition known as Dairy Queen ice cream. Now, I never thought this would be an issue, but I was wrong, because Creston's Dairy Queen, bless their maple leaf hearts, has done what Terry thinks is unthinkable. They've replaced the iconic red plastic spoons, those perfect little shovels of childhood nostalgia, with wooden spoons. Not just any spoons, mind you. They are sleek, eco-friendly, minimalist utensils that look like they were crafted by a Scandinavian architect named Bjorn. They're a little flatter, lighter, and apparently carved from the same tree that makes IKEA furniture. I love them. They feel sophisticated. They whisper, "I care about the planet." Each bite tastes like environmental virtue. Terry, on the other hand, he says it's like eating ice cream with a tongue depressor. He claims it leaves a faint flavor of sawdust. As if a lumberjack special was on the menu itself. So there we sat in the car, two blizzards between us and a philosophical divide wider than the Kootenai River. I say, "It's biodegradable, Terry. We're saving the planet." He says, "Then save it after dessert. I just want to taste ice cream, not lumber." I try to reason with him. Think of it as rustic charm, like eating ice cream on the Oregon Trail. He says, "Fine, you churn the next batch by hand." And just like that, the spoon debate rages. He wants the classic red plastic one. Sturdy, curved just right, no splinters, no gilt. I point out that the plastic ones will be around long after we're gone, floating somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. Then he says, "At least they'll still be useful. Maybe the fish can enjoy a blizzard." At this point, the poor Dairy Queen employee probably sees us coming and dives behind the counter like we're the ice cream critics from 60 Minutes doing an expose. But here's the thing. We always end up laughing about it as we return to the good old USA. Because it's silly. And maybe that's the point. In a world that feels too serious, sometimes you need to argue about spoons, wooden or plastic. You still enjoy the blizzard. So, dear listeners, I offer you this wisdom. Friendship may be eternal, but the Dairy Queen's spoon is not. Whether you're on Team Plastic or on Team Planet, just remember, if you can laugh about spoons, there's still hope for humanity. And that, my friends, is the scoop of the day. Also coming up, by the way, in the next few days, we got to move the clocks. Daylight savings time rears its ugly head again. North Idaho friends, a friendly reminder. This Sunday, November 2nd, we turn clocks back 1 hour. And you got to do it at 2 a.m. You got to get up and do it at 2 a.m. It's cheating if you do it when you go to bed. It's got to be at 2 a.m. And consider it a bonus hour or a trap if you forget to change the oven clock. Use the moment to test your smoke and carbon monoxide alarms. Swap in fresh batteries. And maybe reset your coffee maker so Monday doesn't ambush you in the dark. Mornings will feel brighter. Evenings will sneak up earlier. And your dog will still insist it's supper time an hour early. Out here, that means more time to feed the wood stove and less time to admire the sunset before it dives behind the mountains. So throw another log on, brew an extra cup, and enjoy that extra hour of sleep. Because the long nights of North Idaho are just starting. This is Almost Paradise in North Idaho. And we'll see you in the spring again when we change our clocks once more. It might be a good time to think about getting a new clock. Or a new calendar. We're getting toward the end of 2025. And with the time change, maybe your clock is really hard to change. I know the clock in our bedroom it's tricky to change the hour. I just don't know what buttons to push, and I always have to kind of rethink it. And then the truck in my pickup truck, oh my gosh. I always have to pull out the instruction manual to see how to do that. So maybe it's time to kind of, rethink the clock. And start getting a new calendar, or two, or six, because the new year is coming. We're going to take a few minutes here and do some Boundary County calendar events coming up for this rest of this week and this weekend. And just real quick, before you say this is too boring, it's boring to one person, may not be boring to someone else. So remember that. Thursday. And there's a quilting group, 9 a.m. to noon, at Trinity Lutheran Church. And there's Boundary County Community Preparedness from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Latter-day Saints Church. And there's a Celebrate Recovery meeting at United Methodist Church. The dinner starts at 5:30, and then there's an Al-Anon meeting at 7:30. Friday is a bit fuller. And Friday is Halloween, remember? Veterans Coffee Clatch is at 7:30 a.m. at the Chicken Chop Restaurant. And there's a pumpkin drop at 4 p.m. at Boundary Tractor. Yeah, that's something I might kind of want to check into. I've never actually gone to a pumpkin drop. I've seen it on TV. I've never done that. Boundary County Probation Trunk and Treat at 5 p.m. at the County Annex Lot at 6566 Main Street. There's something for the kids. Community Halloween at BFW at 5 p.m. Candy, chili, and refreshments will be available. Two Brews Trunk or Treat, that's a coffee shop, True Brews. They're doing a trunk or treat from 5 to 8 at 6275 Main Street. And In His Image Harvest Festival at Boundary County Middle School at 5:30. Liberty Lanes, here's a big one. I've already talked about this. About a week ago, I had the gentleman in, Robert, who's in charge of the Liberty Lanes. This is a 21-plus Halloween party at 6 p.m. at the bowling alley. It's a costume contest. There's all kinds of little warming stations, apparently. There's going to be a lot of fun, so you might check that out. Bonner's Ferry Eagles is providing a Halloween party from 6 to 9. And nearby in Sandpoint, there's an Arsenic and Old Lace play going on at the Panita Theater at 7 p.m. And even though it wasn't mentioned in the local newspaper, and that's something that's a, that I'm not going to go there in great detail, although I find it a little frustrating. The Bonner's Ferry High School football team is in a state playoff game with American Falls High School in American Falls, Idaho at 7 p.m. Nothing in the local newspaper was about the football team that has been very successful this year. The past 2 weeks, nothing about them and their tremendous season. But that's okay. I'm going to move on. By the way, it's like a 9-hour drive from here to American Falls, Idaho. So if you're going to go, you might want to start early to get there on time. Saturday, November 1st, is a 77th annual FFA Harvest Auction with dinner at 5:30 p.m. The dinner is at 5:30. The auction is at 6:30, and that's going to be at the Bonner's Ferry High School. Once again, in Sandpoint is the Arsenic and Old Lace play at the Panita Theater, 7 p.m. And Narcotics Anonymous meets at the United Methodist Church at 7:30 p.m. And those are the big things that's going on this weekend. I'm going to do a little personal reflection here now. This is where I might crash and burn. So it's about friends, good friends. Good friends are one of life's greatest blessings. They show up not just when it's convenient, but when it matters most. And I've got a good friend named Terry. And I want to take a moment to talk about Terry. I have sometimes mentioned him in passing with Terry stories. And Terry has been out there beside me, helping me cut and split and stack firewood many times this fall. He loves to help whenever. He shares laughter as we cut and split and stack. That kind of friendship turns chores into memories and reminds us that companionship lightens every burden. Proverbs 17:17 says, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." True friendship is not about grand gestures, but steady presence showing up, helping, listening, and yes, tolerating a few bad jokes, which I am guilty of providing bad jokes. And so does Terry. But we just kind of, that's just part of it, you know? The Bible celebrates these bonds in Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 10. It reminds us that two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls, one can help the other up. Anytime I need something, I call Terry and he's here within 30 minutes. He'll drop what he's doing. That's exactly what friends are like, and Terry is one of those. He lifts me up, and I try to lift him up, physically and spiritually. In a world that can often feel hurried or distant, a faithful friend like Terry reflects God's own steadfast love. Jesus himself modeled this, saying, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." Now, I'm not sure I'm willing to lay down my life for Terry, but maybe, I don't know, depends on the situation. So when a friend stands beside you in the chill of autumn, helping prepare for winter, it's more than kindness. It's a glimpse of divine friendship in everyday life. Thank you, Terry, and thank all of you for listening to this modest little effort on my part to put out a podcast on a somewhat regular basis. And remember, if you got any questions, any suggestions, any thoughts, you can email me at northidahopodcast@gmail.com. I do get a number of emails, and I do respond to every one of them. So maybe I need to share those on air, some of them, maybe without names per se, but I really enjoy doing this, and I hope you enjoy listening to them, at least occasionally, okay? So until next time, have a good weekend, have a safe Halloween, and we'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.